tell you what, Deborah.
Okay, great. Are you ready to
get
started?
Amazing, Deborah. Yeah, we're all set here.
Okay.
General Block speaking.
Terrific. Let's just start off with the basics. So what's the significance of the Battle of Iwo Jima?
Well, for us Marines, it's probably one of the most significant battles that we've ever had, you know, in our history. As you take a look at the Iwo Jima Memorial today that stands, of course, in Washington, D.C., it's really kind of an icon for our nation as well. This was probably one of the bloodiest battles for sure of the Second World War. And for us, this is truly hallowed ground out here on Iwo Jima.
When you say it was one of the bloodiest battles, talk a little bit more about it. What was the price that was paid in that battle by the United States?
Well, the price that was paid, this was the first time that the United States had actually landed on Japanese soil during World War II. And the Japanese were well defended here on Iwo Jima. There were in the neighborhood of about 48,000 total casualties during the 36-day campaign that existed. Of that, there were approximately 27,000 of those were U.S. casualties. And namely speaking, that there was about 6,700 or so that were actually killed in action.
In terms of looking at World War II, what was the significance of that fight in terms of the overall war?
Well, this was a situation that was decided by the National Committee because they wanted to put an airfield on this island to be able to reach the Japanese mainland. So that was highly significant in itself.
Would you say that battle represented a turning point in World War II, and if so, in what way?
I would say that it was a turning point, particularly with the Japanese defenders. They definitely changed their strategy in this particular campaign for the first time. They used the strategy of where they dug in into deeply embedded caves throughout the island and waited until the Marines actually got ashore before they actually opened fire on them. That was one of the reasons that the casualty rates were so high. You know, and just another point of reference, there were over 27 Medals of Honors that were presented following the Battle of Okinawa, and that was roughly over 25% of the entire Medals of Honor that were handed out during World War II.
What would you say about the United States?
I think I just said Okinawa, but it was actually Iwo Jima.
Okay. How would you describe where the U.S. relationship is with Japan right now, and what was that relationship like 67 years ago?
Well, of course, 67 years ago, we were at war with one another. That was the reason that, of course, the campaign was fought. You know, over the previous 60 years, you know, we've had a development of the alliance that we have with Japan, and today it's truly one of the strongest in the world. Yeah, I looked at, we just completed Operation Tomodachi, which was just a little ago, which commenced on 11 March of 2011. The Tomodachi stands for friendship. And I really believe that, you know, that some of that friendship was actually had grown out of the relationship that we've developed here from Iwo Jima campaign years ago. And today, you know, as you go around Japan and you see how that devastation has been cleaned up, you know, it's truly a testament to the Japanese people. But when we responded as quickly as we did during Tomodachi, it was critical that we plugged into the Japanese ground self-defense forces, the air self-defense forces, and maritime self-defense forces, which we did. And it was because of these years working together as a coalition that we were able to do that.
Can you talk a little bit more about Operation Tomodachi in terms of how it changed your views on Japan?
Well, you know, we live in Okinawa, so that's where the 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force is headquartered. You know, so for us, when Tomodachi occurred, which was, of course, a complex crisis that the world had never seen before, you know, a 9.0 earthquake followed by a horrendous tsunami and then a nuclear disaster, that's not something that you routinely train for. But, you know, we pulled together all our commanders, you know, the morning after that event, and within 18 hours, you know, we were flying aircraft, supplies, and personnel, command and control up to the mainland to help our neighbors, because that's truly what it was. It was helping our neighbors, because we live here in Japan as well.
I'll say one thing. In the United States, one of the things that was so amazing to watch about the aftermath of the tsunami is how calmly it seemed like the people of Japan had responded. People stood in line to get supplies and get help. What about that aspect of Japanese life and culture? If you're in the United States, that might have looked more surprising than if you were in Japan. Can you talk about that?
Well, Japan is a very disciplined and organized culture. This is a, you know, it's not a third world nation by any means. You know, they're, as I said, very disciplined. You know, they are prepared to stand in line. They trust the authority, and they consistently will do what they need to do to go ahead and be part of the culture.
Where do things stand in terms of the U.S.-Japan military realignment and anything you can tell us on the status of the move to Guam?
Well, as you know, the two governments are still in negotiation about the actual specifics of that move. You know, that's been something that's been evolving over the recent months here. You know, we came up with a target, you know, several years ago, and during that time, as strategy has changed and our two nations have come together and it's come closer to execution, I think we've made modifications, and those are still under discussion with both the Japanese government and our U.S. government.
In terms of, you had said that the U.S.-Japan relationship is one of the strongest relationships globally. Obviously, the United States was engaged in a terrible war with Japan. What can be learned about what has happened with the U.S. relationship with Japan, keeping in mind the U.S. war going on in Afghanistan and what things may or may not look like in the future?
Well, I think that as we continue to reduce the size of our forces, I know Marine forces in particular, as we draw down in Afghanistan, that we will begin to bring some of those forces back here to the Far East and actually bring some of our battalions back to 3MEF. The security alliance that we have with Japan, as has been stated, is one of the strongest in the world today. And I think Operation Tomodachi just gave us an opportunity to cement that relationship.
Can you talk a little bit more about how long it takes and what the process is for nations to mend relationships? I'll just say this. I was born in 1960, and just in my lifetime, I've seen very big changes in terms of attitudes towards Japan just in the past 20 years. What about the time it takes to mend relationships?
Well, I think it pretty much all depends on the country that you're dealing with. But I think if you look at the relationship that we have with Germany today, you know, following World War II, once again, that's one of the strongest relationships we have as well. So sometimes, you know, even though that we fought a war against one another over time, you know, as we go in and we have to help rebuild that nation, the relationship that we actually develop is far stronger than it is with some of the other nations that we deal with on a routine basis.
Okay, and just as a final question, you know, there are fewer and fewer survivors left from World War II. What is it that you think that especially Americans should be taking away from World War II at this point in our history, and especially focused on U.S.-Japan relations? What should Americans take away from that war?
Well, one thing is that we never want to forget that the war occurred, and we never want to forget the price that we paid. And I think that both our nations are going to be here tomorrow, you know, for this ceremony, and we're going to be remembering both nations, both Japanese and Americans alike. There'll be veterans from both sides that will be here. There'll be family members from both the Japanese and the American side. And it's once again, it's kind of to show both our nations that we will not forget what occurred during World War II. But it also used it as a foundation to go ahead and build for the future, you know, that's once again, that made us the most powerful alliance today in the world.
All right. I know I said that was my last question, but just when you bring up those casualty numbers in Iwo Jima, it's what a dramatic change in terms of modern warfare.
Oh, you're accurate there. You know, today it's more precision kinetic strikes that we talk about. During that time, it was, you know, it was how many bombs could you drop? You know, how many 16-inch shells could be fired into a island? You know, we didn't quite worry as much about the precision as we do today. Today, it's what's expected with the technology we have is one shot, one kill.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. We very much appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Okay, Deborah, thank you very much for your time as well. I think we had a little bit of a delay there, but I appreciate your time and your questions tonight as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.